beautiful music. Let's see if anybody came over. Who knew any new people? We got Brian. Yes, Brian, did you want to say something, Brian?
Yeah.
it's amazing, Bob. I just come on. Of course, I've been checking in about every 30 minutes.
But
I was just listening. I'd listened a little bit to your guest and Robert.
Oh, there's Madeline. I heard Madeline. We haven't heard from Madeline in 24 hours or something.
Bob, I actually have something to say. I totally had an insight.
Okay, go ahead. Let's hear it.
So I was going to ask you how come, maybe I'm going to pull Robert. How come you wouldn't go on Vinny's show? And then I thought about how, because you have been on... You've been on Randy Moggins and Jeff Renz, and you've talked to the Cold Fusion lady.
Yes.
But you... I suggested that Henrik interview you on Red Ice, and you were too weird for them.
I know. Oh, did he check it out?
I don't know. Why wouldn't they talk to you? Because they talk to some wackos.
No, I'm too weird.
That's the thing. So that's what I realized. I was like, you're weirder than frickin' everything.
And then I thought,
it's just neat because I was looking, I dipped my toe in so many different things in the last few years, really.
Yeah.
And when I found all this, I have not gone anywhere else at all in a year.
Yeah, that was a wise move.
And I realized, I think, it's because it's the anti-environment thing. That's what I was looking for, but I hadn't applied that word to my own experience yet.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Yeah, this is an anti-environment. I wouldn't be able to do it without ION, but with ION, we are the anti-environment to everything, to the whole information spectrum.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he said, come on, and we can discuss ideas. I said, I don't have any ideas. And I said, I don't agree with you.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I was stewing on that. Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. Like, if he asked you to talk with him about something specific, would you do that?
No, he's not capable of being specific. The guy's insane. He's actually, Vinny's insane.
Well, he's just Matrix.
Yeah, he's insane because he hasn't even got to where the 19th century moves into the 20th century. He's ill-informed.
Maybe you could inform him.
No, that's the point. He's insane. He can't be informed.
Who are you talking about? The guy that just left?
Vinny. The guy just left, right.
I didn't hear much. Like I said, I would just check in about every 30 minutes, listen for a few minutes, and then go back out. But sounds like when I get to
guy.
when I get to him on the archive, sounds like a treat.
Yeah.
A treat? He sounds like a treat?
Yeah, a treat. Good entertainment. I like to be entertained, Bob.
Especially the first part of that was great. Him and Dave, and when Bob was in there too, I thought it was a treat.
First couple of minutes.
One of the interesting things, I think he asked you, Bob, point blank, he says, do you believe in justice or the justice system or whatever? You said, you said flat out, no, I don't. And then he goes into this whole thing about, having laws, this, that, or the other, and laws to prevent this, laws to prevent that. But this is ION's rant. He's like, look, you got laws about every fucking thing, and everything you got laws about, the things are still happening, right? It hasn't stopped nothing.
That's right.
And then he was even making the point that, look, they you get them to make a law, but then you get people that just, they do everything under the sun to, you know, to break the law, right? It's all about breaking the law. Okay, well, this is the law. Well, fuck that. We're going to, you know.
I liked his line especially. I do not tolerate violence of any kind. I will kill anyone who's violent.
Yeah, that fucking great.
Yeah, it's Paul.
I'll tell you what's nutty is the chat room over on the side here. These people are talking on and on and on for days. We got Norma saying, is that the Charming Bob? And I wrote, this is the Charming Bob. Got somebody named Ort goes, love Vinny. I love Vinny. Bert came in somewhere and said, hey, David is a diplomat of dupes. Is this David Icke's first cousin? Have Matthew send him a free trial bottle. Oh, shit, this is Rob's buddy.
I get roped into everything.
That's right. Yeah.
No, thanks, Bob. That was really good. I enjoyed it. It was. I wanted to put him through the mill, you know, because after you played that audio with the thing, and he did well. He said, "I've changed. You know, I've come a long way from that." And so he didn't have to kind of retrieve any of what he said there, but he instantly remembered what that video was about and what he'd said in it. And he said, "I've developed." And when he spoke as well, he did carry that off. He passed the test. You know, he's very active in what he does, and he has his little, you know, his space is bigger than probably most people's space. He's doing well.
No.
He's
an example of a guy who had too many rules, an incredible number of rules.
Well, that's part of the environment, you know, that people live in. It's the Australian kind of, you know, you can't bring this, that. They have TV, they watch it on TV where you can't do this and you can't do that, and it's part of the culture.
Yeah. I like what Ian says. People know what they can't do. They want to know what they can do.
Bob, I have a lot of rules, and I had a lot more when I started.
Yes,
a year ago.
You're a tough nut to crack.
So
what
are you seeing in Vinny that is different from me? Why can't he see his rules and drop them?
Well, Vinny's a nut. Vinny is avoiding a job. He's doing everything to avoid a job. And he has a whole bunch of rules about doing that.
Yeah. Hey, Madeline,
he's created his own job.
He what?
Every day and money. He created his own job, didn't he? He works every day at what he does, and money comes in through donations.
I guess. I wouldn't pay him any money. I don't find what he does valuable.
I don't think
money's
too
a problem in New Zealand. It's a very rich country, you know, so you're talking about Crystal City where the poshest crystals are coming from and there's all different holistic things going on. But he's got an audience there. He did describe his demographics and stuff, but, you know, actually making money out of it, I don't think that that's an issue for things like that. Not in that area, not in that country.
Okay, well, I want to finish up the recording. It's a pulsing one. It's a bit irritating. And I'm going to finish it up, I don't know, it's 10, 15 minutes. And then we'll go on some other recordings, unless somebody comes in to talk. This would be about 15 minutes. So I will mute everybody and finish up the whatever this recording's about. Many topics. So I hope you hang out, Madeline. I'd like to talk to you at some point or engage your questions and concerns.
Okay.
All right, so I'll mute you.
All participants are now muted.
Bring this over. Sound is good. Sound volume. So this is January 18th, 1995, and we're ending up the session. I'll move it back slightly. Okay.
LaRouche archetype will upset the apparent advantage that cool media have today.
Yes.
So LaRouche will be more successful than Marshall's view, even though.
But Marshall says where lineage-based society meets non-lineage-based society, which one is going to be the most successful?
Right. And could we say that LaRouche himself acts out a kind of lineage patriarchal attitude?
Yes.
And so it paradoxically flips then, that Marshall, representing, I suppose, the non-lineage view, wins out on that level.
Yes, it does.
So they're both a half, Marshall and LaRouche are both a half-truth that meet each other, crossover, and become a tetrad almost.
Almost, because what is being said is that the forces can be described, the input, hot and cold, can be delineated, that is still what is the resultant environment which is created. Does it mean that a starship would have a captain?
I would say it doesn't mean that. You would have the function of captain, but anybody's eligible.
What is the function of an instruction manual? If everyone has the instruction manual and there's no one captain instruction manual...
Right, and the electric age of internet and that today is creating that situation.
Mm.
Will this lead to a global welfare in the sense of guaranteed income for every citizen on the planet?
Not income.
Time.
Energy. Guaranteed energy.
Which is, that's what money used to bring us, so we'll get it anyway.
Yes. So therefore, what if energy, virtually free, would you need money?
So will money, paper money, disappear?
Yes.
And then we'll have cashless society.
Why do you need a can opener when there's no can? You talk about a cashless society from the perspective of saying that this is all a cash.
Right, like a horseless carriage.
Yes.
Yes. So it will... What will people... How will you control people's energy? What will they... Since they will have guaranteed shelter and energy, will they be totally free to participate in society and or not participate?
What they choose to do. The point is that where there is free energy, the only energy that then applies is innovation. Can you innovate? Yes. Cannot innovate? No. But that's not the point.
Well,
what you choose to do is what you choose to do. Where energy is totally free, and will not be totally free, we show you, there's still cost. But the costs are minimal. Every individual on this earth is paid in energy. Access, the energy itself is free. And there is only a minute remaining.
Do you care to do a wrap up on this, or do you want to...
Let me throw one more point in.
Okay.
So the final legacy of the lineage point is in the banking families.
Even they have no power.
Already?
Even now they're losing power.
Right. Are they going to try to hold on to the power in some way?
They will try. But you see...
And with fusion energy, can they see that fusion energy will upset that situation?
Oh, yes.
That's the resistance of fusion.
Oh, yes.
We will break through that problem within 5 years?
Yes.
Where the bankers will give up, so to speak.
You see, money is not as important as energy. Money represents energy at this present time. But what happens when energy is totally and completely free, but for the distribution of it?
So there'll be a great public argument all over the world about that when cold fusion is realized?
As it's realized, you can give energy away. It doesn't matter. Right now, energy is expensive because energy is essentially a minus situation. You put in this energy, and you can convert it to another type of energy, but there's still loss of friction. Where there is, and we'll use these words, remember them, as society moves towards the frictionless society, all those things of friction are set aside.
And many levels of meaning there.
Many levels of meaning. Political, emotional, moving towards what we describe as the frictionless society. And all those things associated with friction fall to the wayside.
What you call the truly modern era will begin.
Yes, the beginning of the modern era.
Will the relatively frictionless happen before 2010?
Yes, it's beginning, and it's not here yet.
Okay.
Now I stand.
Thank you, Reverend. So unless there's any further comment at this time, shall we end the session?
Please.
Thank you. Dear Lord, please enfold these entities in thy love and thy perfection. Amen. Please clear any negative influences from these entities now. Allow the body to become completely relaxed. Perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal, naturally, and begin returning all other systems of the body to normal, naturally, now. Thank you for our sessions.
We do thank you. You both. God's blessing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Same to you. Now I would like Michael to awaken, feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, loved now.
When the Russians put up the satellite in 1957, they had huge boosters. I mean, they had some really good boosters. They had the technology and the thinking, and they just got some good boosters going. And they put this thing in orbit. Well, what in the hell did the United States have? I mean, the Russians have done that. And the Cold War, you know, war game they're ahead. What did the United States have? Redstone missiles. They had nothing to throw up. And even if they had a satellite to put up that month, you know, after the Russians, they could have easily put a little transmitter. That's all it was. Mm-hmm. It was just a little tiny transmitter.
They could have, but what are you saying?
But they didn't have the boosters to get them up.
All right.
So they're working rapidly on boosters. But how much could they put in orbit? I mean, they wanted to put up something. You know, it's going to take you 1 ton of stuff to get 1 pound up there. 1 pound of what? And, you know, what kind of transmitter? That little transmitter that the Russians used was made out of little peanut tubes. The little tiny, they used to call them peanuts of those days. Little peanut vacuum tubes.
So that was lighter?
It was lighter. Well, they couldn't use the big, large vacuum tubes because that would require a bigger transformer and a bigger battery and all that. So they went down to peanut tubes. Still tube technology. The Americans took a different tack. They had to lighten everything. Everything had to be lightened. Everything. If any, an excess minute ounce, take it out.
Yeah.
You know, they work on the Colin Chapman principle. If it doesn't break, it's over-engineered.
Who's Colin Chapman?
He was a guy who used to build motor cars.
What was the principle?
If it doesn't break, it's over-engineered. Okay. So what the Americans do, build it to the point that it broke, then go back a step. So they start up getting, they started using the early transistors and et cetera, and then came the development of the chip. But the point is, because of, they didn't have the boosters, they had to lighten ship and go into new technologies.
Yeah, now you said they could have sent the little transmitter up,
uh-huh.
But they couldn't because they had the boot. What's the difference?
Well, the thing about it is the Russians had this whacking great big booster.
Oh, they didn't have the booster.
And the Americans didn't.
But you said the Americans could have sent a little transmitter.
They could have sent a little transmitter up, but they didn't have the booster to do it.
Oh, I mean they couldn't send it up.
No, they couldn't send it up. No, right. They could design it.
So the Russians had temporarily moved ahead with the booster point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the Americans didn't have that powerful booster, so to get up the same weight, they had to miniaturize everything. Okay, that's the first thing. Second thing was I was looking at light bulbs. A light bulb, and it was one of the first ones that Edison put together. And this thing was just chuntering away. You know, it turns, of the electricity going into it, it turns about 90% into heat and about 5% into light. Now they're getting to light bulbs that are 75% light, 50% heat. And in there's just a new thing that's coming up that is 95% light, 5% heat. This is a new light bulb.
What was the first light bulb? Wasn't that the way it was?
No, the first light bulb was exactly the opposite. 95% heat, 5% light.
Oh, Now, what does heat mean? You don't mean
heat.
It's hot?
Hot. It gets hot. It's transformed that electrical energy into heat, not light. What you want from it is light.
Right, but the heat, you would not heat a room with it, but it just was wasted in heat.
Wasted in heat.
I see.
Heat waste.
Yeah.
Friction.
Yeah.
Okay, now what's happening is you can buy light bulbs, and they've just put some light bulbs up in the Smithsonian Institution, up in the high bay lighting. That's 95% light, 5% heat, wasted energy. So it's the friction has been dropping
right.
rapidly. Now, because, why? Because our source of power is itself high in friction. We have a generator at Niagara Falls powering New York. How much energy is lost on those transmission lines to New York? I mean, they're able to, they pump through, I mean, what was it, 1,000 kilovolts to get the pressure in the line, because there's so much, there is so much frictional loss. Now.
And you're saying it has a lot of friction to begin it.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're going to say that.
So we have a chain, a generator here and a light bulb here. You know, left hand is generator. Right hand is generator and left hand is light bulb. So the generator gets that power going, but by the time we get down here, we go so much frictional loss that even though, you know, with the early light bulb, we lose of the generating power, we got 100% percent generating power. By the time we reach the light bulb, we're using probably less than a hundredth of a percent is turning into light. Well, because of all that, we've improved the light bulb. We've improved this end of the equation.
Yeah.
Now, what happens now with the efficiencies of that is now we bring in a really efficient power source. It doesn't...
Fusion.
Frictionless power. It's not a minus one situation. It's a plus situation. You put in 10, you get out 100.
Right.
You know, conservation of energy goes tipsy-turvy. So what happens is now we have because of the inefficiencies of our previous system, we now have efficiencies of the appliances. When we bring in the efficient system,
the
whole level goes up tremendously.
Right.
And the third thing was that Ellie and I were being paid for doing sessions in money that wasn't money. This is sort of rather strange. We were being paid in power chips.
Energy.
Yeah.
Energy source.
Energy sets. We did call them, for want of another name, we called them dollars, but we never spent them on anything but energy.
You were given paper?
No, we were having accredited.
Yeah, it was in your account.
Yeah. And it's for energy. We get all of our energy costs free. You know, transport of moving a tomato from California to BC right now increases the cost of the tomato.
Right.
Okay. And also the grower has to be paid.
Right.
But what if in the distribution. But what if it suddenly shifts and change that there's no cost to the grower to grow it? The energy to pump water, the energy of it, is free. Just distribution costs. You don't pay for water. You pay for the distribution costs.
The tomato, you pay for the...
You pay for basically the energy to get it here.
Yeah.
We're paying for energy. Now, that... Because...
Truck energy.
Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Distribution energy. That's what we're paying for now.
Right.
But we start with the next... What if all the costs go wham right down? Now, all we're paying is for distribution energy. That's all we're paying for is distribution energy.
And that's what you get paid for.
That's what you get paid.
Now, how are they going to go through in the next 10 years, 95 to 2005, the disappearance of the money system and into this non-money system?
Well, what happens now is that electronic funds transfer around the world is so instantaneous... that they're, you know, by a touch of a button, the United States sends $1 billion to China. I mean, it's just that. I mean, okay, it's just numbers in an account. Just numbers. The Canadian dollar goes from 75 cents down to 70 cents, and the arbitrators might start making money. They're transferring dollars as numbers through electronic means. There's no paper dollars changing yet, or checks, or gold, or anything.
So when Fleischmann Pons is accepted, they're going to be the Orpheus for a while, Orpheus tuning the whole world, as they bring in this fusion environment, unless, I guess, company buy patents and they'll distribute it.
Yeah.
They're going to be the focal of this transition, which is going to affect, it's going to create this money, this energy economy, this energy unit form of currency.
Yeah.
That transition is going to be very interesting.
Very interesting. Now, what's been interesting is, if you see in a back room here, we have a refrigerator. It was our spare. We bought another refrigerator for the top of the house and put that one down here. Now, because we got the room to do it. Now, what if we replaced this downstairs refrigerator with a power unit that taps into the entire power system of the house? That's it. It's good for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So how much do we pay for it? Now, the power's free. Yeah. You just pay for the unit, and how it does it. But that's it. It's there. You don't pay for power in your house. You just pay for the system. Now, what's going to happen, I guarantee you this, is that these power units will be leased to you by the power company.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And we'll be here for maintenance. You're paying a maintenance fee every year. And you lease them on a... So your power, instead of costing you $50 a month, is now going to cost you $20 a month.
Right. So you're still paying.
You're still paying. Because that's what E.G. says is the old aspect of the friction lineage society. Because the hydro has a lineage. We are the producers of power. So therefore, any power thing that comes up, we are going to be in charge of it. Well, that's true. To a degree.
It's going to get nicked.
It's going to get nicked. Boy, is it ever.
Oh, at first they're going to charge us, but that's going to go out.
That's going to go out. I mean, why should the power company be in charge of power?
Why can't you just buy it like you buy your telephone?
Like you buy your telephone. But the telephone company is in charge of all the telephone stuff.
They used to be.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of telephone companies, but they're all telephone companies.
Yeah.
But they say if anything comes up with telephones, it's our business.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's still that lineage thing here.
And in the internet, in the new software share world, what Marshall, you could say the fusion of information that's happened now is now going to be complemented with the fusion of energy.
Yeah.
So how people romanticize or utopianize the internet.
Yeah.
When the fusion becomes obvious, that's going to be utopianized, and it's going to be realized. Those two, the software and the hardware, come together. And in the internet world, they argue...
The following is a recording of a session given by the Evergreens. The Evergreens is an...
So that was January 18th, 1995, and we went from ancient... UFO types vehicles manufactured by the Egyptian Indians, all the way up to what's going to happen in the next decades with cold fusion. Very big stretch of time. I'll just see if anybody wants to say anything before we go on to the next recording. Unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
Next recording.
Nope, I'm good.
Good, that was good.
Yeah, what I heard of it, is this, you got to, it's still Evergreens, right?
Yes, still Evergreens. So I'm going to go on. There's a sequence here. I think we're going to get more into biblical times. We've done Atlantis and Egypt and India, so now this next one's Bible times, Noah's Ark, I think, and then we'll see where that goes. Okay, I will mute you, mute all.
All participants are now muted.
The next one is September 9th, 97. Part 2, September 9th, 97. 9th, 97, must be this one. Check. 222. Okay. September 9th, 97.
Greetings, Evergreen.
Greetings, ma'am. A couple of questions that came up after yesterday's reading, short questions. In the speaker's booklet about the Boodians and their history, it indicates the Boodians mated with humans about 6,000 years before the Nazarene. And they said it was with certain peoples of bloodlines that were dying out.
Yes.
Who were those peoples of bloodline dying out?
Certain Etruscans, certain Celts. We see those two.
Not Atlanteans.
Some that would become Atlantean, yes. But...
No, Atlantis, this is after Atlantis has disappeared in 10,000 BC.
Yes, but best way to describe this is to form an engineering caste.
For the Boodians.
For the Boodians.
Right. I understand that they were trying to make, to alter themselves by mating with the humans.
They would swap genes, yes.
Right. And for them, they want to have some of the physical, mental engineering abilities of the human in their genes.
Yes.
Right. But how would you explain, it's not before the Atlanteans have disappeared.
Yes. But the concept, if you look at the concept of Atlantis was engineering, that those that they chose had those genes, had the engineering. You see, if you go before this, before what would be called the beginning of the great mathematic, that as the great mathematic began to influence engineering.
Is that after the collapse of the second Atlantis?
This is before the collapse.
All right.
But much of that knowledge lost. Much of it.
After the collapse, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, and if you look at the argument between nature and nurture, is mankind automatically an engineering race? Is there something that drives mankind to create the environment in which such things as a great mathematic would exist?
I think you're implying that we weren't.
And possibly mankind is. And possibly that would be the reason the Boodians chose to have that bloodline within their own.
And that is after, so that the great mathematique was created by Atlanteans?
It was also used by them.
But it was invented by, according to speakers, by a civilization on some planet that lived 360 million years.
Yes, that's long before.
Right, so then the Boodians had the great mathematic.
They had remnants of it.
Oh, and then the Atlanteans developed it from contact with the Boodians?
Yes.
And then the Atlanteans, being humans, had a particular engineering ability that the Boodians wanted to acquire.
Yes.
I see, that makes sense. So when you said that after the Celts comes the Atlantean, you meant that metaphorically?
Yes.
As the engineering concept?
Yes.
I see.
Take it one step further. This society that exists now is in many ways Atlantean.
That's what I understand. And Lemuria is coming through Russia in
yes.
the next 50
in
years.
In that style, yes.
Beg your pardon?
In that style, yes. And much modified, because mankind has changed. Societies have grown in different directions, but still there is that which... that would be sought towards, would be the best description.
Right, so that mating 6,000 years before the Nazarene and planting the seeds for the benefit of the Boodians, but also they could see when we would develop to the 20th century with that.
Yes.
That's the Atlantean thing. I see. All right, I'd like to move on. One little aspect in the cold fusion topic, you were talking about how it would be hard to get the information that Matsushita has out to people because there'll be so much resistance by regular old industries. Is there going to be a problem? They have to be rather careful in putting out this breakthrough?
No, but the consensus of all involved is that while invention changes the environment in which the invention is released, that certain invention affects more than other certain invention. That where there is a built-up infrastructure worldwide, essentially, and if that infrastructure is superseded or affected deeply, then the fall of that infrastructure would affect other infrastructure. So therefore, with some degree of delicacy, this needs to be done so that this infrastructure that the invention would affect is eased, not pushed.
Right, and I got the impression that in North America, especially when there's more fear of the effects of cold fusion, that people like me have to write about it for Americans to hear about it.
Yes. Understand something. If you would take a good look at the mercury battery. Now, the mercury battery was, in essence, unknown by most North Americans and not available for purchase for almost a decade after it was created.
Where was it created?
It was created in Europe.
Oh, okay.
A mercury battery. Now, that is a small matter. Now, the belief was that the mercury battery would completely obviate the need for carbon acid batteries, which eventually it has replaced, but not completely. But the belief was that the whole industry would collapse with the introduction of the mercury battery.
Right.
So it was withheld. Technological advance has its downside, so it's believed. And the downside of cold fusion is the collapse of the electrical utility system.
All right, I understand that. I'd like to move on back to the Boodians. I forgot to ask. I have a note here that on April 21st, 1997, I had a dream, which to me seemed I had a dream about the Boodians or some, I can't remember the details, but I made a note of at the time that I interacted with some Boodian reality or something on that night. Can you ever look at that dream and see what I was doing?
Well, it's a sudden, this is most apt. It's trying to put a handle on something to which is very hard to put a handle to. That was the dream.
That was me doing that?
Yes.
Did I have something trying to help me?
No. It was a dream that you yourself created to form a method that you can put a handle to something that it's hard to put a handle to.
Which is the Boodian phenomenon?
Yes.
Yeah. So I didn't have a Boodian visit me or something?
No,
you
did not see that.
All right, and it wasn't because of some contact that was coming that
no.
I was intuiting. Okay, I understand that. Another, in the reference to the JFK assassination and the murder of Dorothy Kilgallen, how did the people that murdered her find out what her and Jack Ruby said?
She discussed this with several people. She discussed it with several. You must understand it was not something that happened without prior knowledges.
Right.
She had announced, she had said, she was then a loose cannon.
Oh, that's right. She did sort of, it was announced.
Yes.
At least among people in the newspaper world.
Yes.
So somebody who would concern found out.
Yes.
And they acted quickly.
Yes.
Okay, I forgot about that part, yeah. All right. In relation to the AIDS question, in many people who write books about the AIDS was a conspiracy, it was manufactured and tested, they cite the gay experiments in 78-79 or clinics where they tested a certain something on herpes victims in the gay community in 79 or so in New York and San Francisco. Now the Evergreens have said, no, that wasn't how AIDS, that wasn't done there. But someone argued with me about that, and I wasn't sure if the Evergreens agreed with me, but I remember them saying that it was started in Africa, and it did not start in New York and San Francisco.
It did not start in New York, and San Francisco started in Africa.
So whatever story is about these early gays getting these herpes tests, that was not a planting of AIDS.
No, was not.
And that will stand, okay. One question from yesterday. I was watching some shows, fringe show, where this guy was saying, look, the image of the dragon in certain Chinese artifacts from 2,000 years ago looked just like the dragons from artifacts from Mayan culture. And he was trying to make a theory that something was in common between the Chinese and Mayan. I can't remember if it was about UFO contact, but this person was wondering about the universality of this dragon image all around the world 2,000 years ago. Can the Evergreens comment on the truth of that or why that would come up?
You see, the question is, why is there in Mayan culture such statues of genotypes that were not in the Mayan culture? If you look carefully, you would see that there are statues that have Negroid features, Caucasian features, but the Mayans were neither Negroid nor Caucasian. So where did they find all of these models on which to make their statuary? What did they have?
Sounds like there was a global culture, global village interaction, so to speak.
Yes.
That's in.
Yes. Now we're going to give you another question. Why would the Egyptians have a need for batteries?
This has come up in previous readings. They wouldn't have a need.
They would not have need at all. Now we're going to ask another question. How were those on the Indian subcontinent able to fuse metals of widely differing temperatures? Something that is able to be done in laboratory settings presently, but could not be done until at least 30 years ago. But these were done approximately 1,500 years ago. How was it done? Going to ask you another question. Why would a society want to know about another society? Now, these are not easy questions to answer because they would appear to be within themselves disparate, but how could a dragon be seen not only in Chinese literature, Mayan literature, but in other literatures?
Because they saw UFOs?
Mm.
Were seen all over the world. If it's a UFO thing, I don't know.
Dragon existed then.
Something that was drawn like a dragon. Do you ever need to have an answer on that?
Why would you draw something as a dragon? Because you have nothing else to compare it to.
So it is something they've seen that's strange.
Yes.
So it is UFOs.
Yes.
I see. So, and they were seen by cultures all over the world.
Yes. But still does not answer the question we asked in the beginning.
Why do they have, my question is, why do they see it as a dragon? All have the same response. You know what I mean?
Mm. And why would the Mayans be able to carve statues of racial characteristics which they themselves did not have?
I think they were a global culture.
So how does a global culture communicate?
Would they have electrical vehicles? They have airplanes? And by radio? Or no, they showed up in Peru. I think people traveled a lot.
They did. So how did they travel?
So you're implying they had some technologies of travel that we don't expect?
Exactly.
And what was that?
What is...
You're saying the UFO people dropped these people off?
Now you're seeing it.
But were they willingly abducted or conscious of the abduction?
Yes. What if it's collusion?
Oh, I see. The UFOs introduced everybody.
So
they had actual encounters.
Yes.
Even though it says in the speaker's thing that there was no interaction.
You must understand certain things. The speaker's book is very, very simplified.
I see.
By necessity.
Because it was 20 years ago.
Yes. But for all that could be said of ship travel and the like, we're in the drawings of Mayans, or even in the drawings of the Chinese, where are their ships that took them from place to place?
There aren't any.
There are not any. But there are pictures of dragons.
Because that's what they couldn't see what we see today. Culturally, they saw it as a dragon or something.
Or describe it as.
Right, it was like a mind-blowing experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
Were dragons real?
No. Dragons are not real.
Is it something from the collective unconscious, an image?
They could be seen as such, but in actuality, describe something that you've never seen to somebody who will never see one anyway. You see, if you're going to draw a picture of an aircraft, it will fit under certain designations of these are the wings, these are the tail appendage, and etc. Because you have fixed in your mind what an aircraft is and can do. There are many variations on aircraft, size, width, length, etc. But essentially the same design throughout. Now, if you have no aircraft, how can you draw a picture of an aircraft? If you say it has wings, then so do birds. So let's put birds' wings. Now, it's not exactly that. We said wings. Well, these are wings. These are the only wings we know that come on birds. So in a culture, it would be a bird. Now, it travels without moving its wings. And so on and so on.
All right, I understand. Were these the Boodians again?
We cannot say.
Right, but they were friendly. No violent acts happened to the humans that were...
No.
And were the humans exhilarated from these experiences?
You see...
And create myths?
If you follow through on Arthur Clarke...
Yeah.
Did any advanced technology appear as magic?
Yeah.
Now go back one step on that. And you do not have magic in your society more than you have, that you have more influences on your society that are non-material. So you could say that an advanced technology would appear as godlike. Now, if that is followed through on that particular concept, then those that would aid you would be godlike, and how would be your relationship to a god? Consider it fortunate, consider it a blessing, consider it what you will.
Yeah. So that means Chariots of the Gods, one of the first books to start off this kind of thinking, is a pretty accurate book.
In many ways it is.
Yeah. Does Eric von Däniken know it's more accurate than people give credence to?
He knows this.
Right.
So do several others.
Yeah. All right, I'd like to move on to another topic. Thanks for that.
Thanks.
I'd like to focus on me and Carolyn. Do we need to locate Carolyn Dean?
Please.
Could you please locate Carolyn Dean in
311
New York City, New York State, New York City, East 91st Street? Is that street?
Yes.
Number 311, apartment number 7. Carolyn Dean.
Yes, we have this one.
Right. Now, she has one more question about some of the pressing issues. The Ontario College took away her license 2 years ago and has now moved to through lawyers to get it again. There's two ways to go. Either redo the trial, which is not possible on the books because you can only appeal it 30 days after it happened, or you can try to have it reinstated, because now there is a climate and laws are changing in the Ontario legislature so that they're reassessing the taking away licenses of alternative doctors. Carolyn's wondering which way she might have to go or should go.
The third way. Ask that the judgment be annulled.
Rather than reinstating?
Rather than reinstating. Annulled.
And you do that right to the, you go straight to the authorities?
Straight to the authorities in this, yes. But it is, seek for it to be annulled. Now, this is for two reasons. The first is that it's quick. The second, it saves face all around.
Right.
So ask that this be annulled. Yes, the climate has changed. Alternative medicine is now more acceptable. You see, if it were that she were a charlatan and that she was practicing medicine without a license, a different matter. If she had been a licensed medical doctor, which she were, and that she had been prescribing excessive dosages of prescription medication, that would be another thing. But that she was a licensed medical doctor who was looking into alternative methodologies that were not agreed upon by the College of Physicians and Surgeons is yet a third matter. So since it's this third matter, and since the research that she has been working upon seems to show certain results, then for the College of Physicians and Surgeons to save face, have the whole matter brushed under the rug by having it annulled, and that would be it.
Right, and then she could get her license back.
Yes.
Yeah, and in other words, she should bring in the mirror fact, what mirror is showing into this
yes.
information, and the lawyer, so to tell the lawyer, her lawyer, to go that way.
Yes.
All right.
Annulled.
Yeah.
Not for fight this for its correctness or rightness, but that the whole judgment be abrogated by annulment.
All right, thank you very much. Now, I'd like to ask a question about myself. Ellie's the only person I know who's asked this, but apparently I am living other lives as Bob Dean. At this time, I'd like to hear what these other lives are, if I've stated the question correctly.
Now, consider that you are a quart bottle. And just before you chose to come into this existence, you took off this quart bottle 27 teaspoons full. Now, from 27 other quart bottles, each one of them gives you one teaspoonful, so that there's 72, but individual, fill back to your full quart. You see the analogy?
No, I don't get it. Are you saying that my soul is a quart bottle?
Yes.
And I take 27 parts of that out?
Yes.
And where do I put them?
You put them in 27 other quart bottles.
Ah.
And every one of them gives you one teaspoon back, so that you now have your full quart.
Oh, yeah, they gave them back to me. Right. Okay, to the soul bottle.
Different,
no, I put something in them, didn't I?
Yes.
I took the 27 and put them in 27 bottles?
27 other bottles, of which Each bottle had 27 taken out of it, so everyone shares a 27th of everyone else.
These other bottles are other souls?
Yes.
So I do this mixing before I reincarnate.
Yes. So you are linked with 27 others. Now, here's the point. It's not 27. It exceeds... It matches the population of the Earth.
Now, this, what I think of immediately is that when one dies and gets to the middle of the plate and sees all your 3,000 lives as ants going around the rim of the plate, this is an old evergreen image, I can go and relive any one of those lives again.
Yes.
Differently.
Yes.
So this is, you're explaining how that happens right
yes.
now.
Yes.
So all my lives are everybody else's life that's going on?
Everyone is.
Yeah, but what Ellie was told about being a secretary in Chicago, she was given a few.
These are other existences in which you yourself have directly been in, where you have been the major component. Now realize, there are other lives where you've been a minor component. You've been one fraction of an individual. So could you see what learning then is? Learning is, you've learned everything that is to learn. And there's still more everything.
Right, so give me a couple of lives that I'm the majority in that Ellie is having right now, other lives as Ellie.
That you're having?
Yeah, that I'm having, that like you had.
Okay.
I'm not a secretary in Chicago. But...
No. But of those lives, there is one to the year 603 to Italian peninsula itself. In that existence, you were associated with the pressing of olive oil, but you were not the owner of the yard in which this was done. You were a transient worker, a friend of a family, trusted within. Now that, but you have no resonance in this existence with that at all. None. Because there is no need for a resonance. To the year 1691, in that existence, to an area that is the northern portion of Paris, in that existence, you were a decided criminal. You were a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Not a murderer, a smuggler. But you smuggled in that existence books. In that existence, let us assure you, in certain circumstances, that was death. Certain books, death. Not acceptable. But you did.
I'm definitely resonating with that life.
Oh, that's a very strong resonance. There are several imports on that life. It's not that you're anti-authoritarian. It's because that you look at authority askance. You understand its need for its being, but you can see its tentacles being here, there, and everywhere.
I can see its tentacles?
No, you can. You don't want it.
Yeah, everywhere.
Not at all. So what you see authority is misused authority. That is your argument with authority.
Yeah.
Not that it is authority, but that it is misused.
Yeah.
So that's a very strong resonance in this existence. Now, let's bring you to yet one small point. In the city of this is north of Calcutta. It's a small area. There is a farm, and on that farm is a young girl who will, in the next 5 years, be married, and will have 2 children, and will herself die in childbirth of her 3rd child. There is no resonance with that child in this existence now. But, because of certain observations that she